6. It was very little of it talk, however. It was mostly exclamation. I've forgotten a little the order in which things happened, for a scene of confusion followed. Stepan Trofimovitch uttered some exclamation in French, clasping his hands, but Varvara Petrovna had no thought for him. Even Mavriky Nikolaevich muttered some rapid, jerky comment. But Pyotr Stepanovitch was the most excited of all. He was trying desperately, with bold gesticulations, to persuade Varvara Petrovna of something, but it was a long time before I could make out what it was. He appealed to Praskovya Ivanovna and Lizaveta Nikolaevna, too. Even in his excitement, addressing a passing shout to his father. In fact, he seemed all over the room at once. Varvara Petrovna, flushing all over, sprang up from her seat and cried to Praskovya Ivanovna, "Did you hear what he said to her here just now? Did you hear it?" But the latter was incapable of replying. She could only mutter something and wave her hand. The poor woman had troubles of her own to think about. She kept turning her head towards Liza, and was watching her with unaccountable terror, but she didn't even dare to think of getting up and going away until her daughter should get up. In the meantime, the captain wanted to slip away. That I noticed. There was no doubt that he had been in a great panic from the instant that Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch had made his appearance. But Pyotr Stepanovitch took him by the arm and would not let him go. "It is necessary, quite necessary," he pattered on to Varvara Petrovna, still trying to persuade her. He stood facing her, as she was sitting down again in her easy chair, and, I remember, was listening to him eagerly. He had succeeded in securing her attention. "It is necessary. You can see for yourself, Varvara Petrovna, that there is a misunderstanding here, and much that is strange on the surface, and yet the thing's as clear as daylight and as simple as my finger. I quite understand that no one has authorized me to tell the story, and I dare say I look ridiculous putting myself forward. But in the first place, Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch attaches no sort of significance to the matter himself, and besides, there are incidents of which it is difficult for a man to make up his mind to give an explanation himself. And so it's absolutely necessary that it should be undertaken by a third person, for whom it's easier to put some delicate points into words. Believe me, Varvara Petrovna, that Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch is not at all to blame for not immediately answering your question just now with a full explanation. It's all a trivial affair. I've known him since his Petersburg days. Besides, the whole story only does honour to Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, if one must make use of that vague word honour. You mean to say that you were a witness of some incident which gave rise to this misunderstanding? Asked Varvara Petrovna. I witnessed it and took part in it, Pyotr Stepanovitch hastened to declare. If you'll give me your word that this will not wound Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch's delicacy in regard to his feeling for me, from whom he never conceals anything, and if you are convinced also that your doing this will be agreeable to him, certainly it will be agreeable, and for that reason I consider it a particularly agreeable duty. I am convinced that he would beg me to do it himself. The intrusive desire of this gentleman, who seemed to have dropped on us from heaven to tell stories about other people's affairs, was rather strange and inconsistent with ordinary usage. But he had caught Varvara Petrovna by touching on too painful a spot. I did not know the man's character at that time, and still less his designs. "I am listening," Varvara Petrovna announced with a reserved and cautious manner. She was rather painfully aware of her condescension. "It's a short story. In fact, if you like, it's not a story at all," he rattled on, "though a novelist might work it up into a novel in an idle hour. It's rather an interesting little incident, Praskovya Ivanova, and I am sure that Lizaveta Nikolaevna will be interested to hear it, because there are a great many things in it that are odd, if not wonderful. 5 years ago, in Petersburg, Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch made the acquaintance of this gentleman, this very Mr. Lebyadkin, who's standing here with his mouth open, anxious, I think, to slip away at once. Excuse me, Varvara Petrovna. I don't advise you to make your escape, though, you discharged clerk in the former commissariat department, you see. I remember you very well." Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch and I know very well what you've been up to here, and don't forget, you'll have to answer for it. I ask your pardon once more, Varvara Petrovna. In those days, Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch used to call this gentleman his Falstaff. That must be, he explained suddenly, some old burlesque character at whom everyone laughs, and who is willing to let everyone laugh at him, if only they'll pay him for it. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch was leading at that time in Petersburg a life, so to say, of mockery. I can't find another way to describe it, because he is not a man who falls into disillusionment, and he disdained to be occupied with work at that time. I'm only speaking of that period, Varvara Petrovna. Lebyadkin had a sister, the woman who was sitting here just now. The brother and sister hadn't a corner of their own, but were always quartering themselves on different people. He used to hang about the arcades in the Gostiny Dvor, always wearing his old uniform, and would stop the more respectable-looking passers-by, and everything he got from them he'd spend in drink. His sister lived like the birds of heaven. She'd help people in their corners, and do jobs for them on occasion. It was a regular bedlam. I'll pass over the description of this life in corners, a life to which Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch had taken. In the poorer quarters of Russian towns, a single room is often let out to several families, each of which occupies a corner. At that time, from eccentricity, I'm only talking of that period, Varvara Petrovna. As for eccentricity, that's his own expression. He does not conceal much from me. Mademoiselle Lebyadkin, who was thrown in the way of meeting Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch very often, at one time was fascinated by his appearance. He was, so to say, a diamond set in the dirty background of her life. I am a poor hand at describing feelings, so I'll pass them over. But some of that dirty lot took to jeering at her once, and it made her sad. They always had laughed at her, but she did not seem to notice it before. She wasn't quite right in her head even then, but very different from what she is now. There's reason to believe that in her childhood she received something like an education through the kindness of a benevolent lady. Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch had never taken the slightest notice of her. He used to spend his time chiefly in playing preference with a greasy old pack of cards for stakes of a quarter farthing with clerks. But once, when she was being ill-treated, he went up, without inquiring into the cause, and seized one of the clerks by the collar and flung him out of a second-floor window. It was not a case of chivalrous indignation at the sight of injured innocence. The whole operation took place in the midst of roars of laughter, and the one who laughed loudest was Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch himself. As it all ended without harm, they were reconciled and began drinking punch. But the injured innocent herself did not forget it. Of course, it ended in her becoming completely crazy. I repeat, I'm a poor hand at describing feelings, but the delusion was the chief feature in this case. And Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch aggravated that delusion as though he did it on purpose. Instead of laughing at her, he began all at once treating Mademoiselle Lebyadkin with sudden respect. Kirillov, who was there, a very original man, Varvara Petrovna, and very abrupt, you'll see him perhaps one day, for he's here now. Well, this Kirillov, who, as a rule, is perfectly silent, suddenly got hot, and said to Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, I remember, that he treated the girl as though she were a marquise, and that was doing for her altogether. I must add that Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch had rather a respect for this Kirillov. What do you suppose was the answer he gave him? You imagine, Mr. Kirillov, that I am laughing at her. Get rid of that idea. I really do respect her, for she's better than any of us. And do you know, he said it in such a serious tone. Meanwhile, he hadn't really said a word to her for 2 or 3 months, except good morning and goodbye. I remember, for I was there, that she came at last to the point of looking on him almost as her betrothed, who dared not elope with her, simply because he had many enemies and family difficulties, or something of the sort. There was a great deal of laughter about it. It ended in Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch's making provision for her when he had to come here, and I believe he arranged to pay a considerable sum, 300 rubles a year, if not more, as a pension for her. In short, it was all a caprice, a fancy of a man prematurely weary on his side, perhaps. It may even have been, as Kirillov says, a new experiment of a blasé man, with the object of finding out what you can bring a crazy cripple to. You picked out on purpose, he said, the lowest creature, a cripple, forever covered with disgrace and blows, knowing too that this creature was dying of comic love for you, and set to work to mystify her completely on purpose, simply to see what would come of it. Though how a man is so particularly to blame for the fancies of a crazy woman to whom he had hardly uttered two sentences the whole time. There are things, Varvara Petrovna, of which it is not only impossible to speak sensibly, but it's even nonsensical to begin speaking of them at all. Well, eccentricity, then, let it stand at that. Anyway, there's nothing worse to be said than that, and yet now they've made a scandal out of it. I am, to some extent, aware, Varvara Petrovna, of what is happening here. The speaker suddenly broke off and was turning to Lebyadkin, but Varvara Petrovna checked him. She was in a state of extreme exaltation. "Have you finished?" she asked. "Not yet. To complete my story, I should like to ask this gentleman one or two questions, if you'll allow me. You'll see the point in a minute, Varvara Petrovna." "Enough. Afterwards. Leave it for the moment, I beg you." "Oh, I was quite right to let you speak." "And note this, Varvara Petrovna," Pyotr Stepanovich said hastily. "Could Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch have explained all this just now in answer to your question, which was perhaps too peremptory?" "Oh, yes, it was. And wasn't I right in saying that in some cases it's much easier for a third person to explain things than for the person interested?" "Yes, yes. But in one thing you were mistaken, and I see with regret are still mistaken."
"Really? What's that?"
"You see... But won't you sit down, Pyotr Stepanovich?"
"Oh, as you please. I am tired indeed. Thank you."
He instantly moved up an easy chair and turned it so that he had Varvara Petrovna on one side and Praskovya Ivanovna at the table on the other, while he faced Lebyadkin, from whom he did not take his eyes for 1 minute. "You are mistaken in calling this eccentricity."
"Oh, if it's only that—"
"No, no, no. Wait a little," said Varvara Petrovna, who was obviously about to say a good deal and to speak with enthusiasm. As soon as Pyotr Stepanovich noticed it, he was all attention. "No, it was something higher than eccentricity, and I assure you, something sacred even. A proud man who has suffered humiliation early in life and reached the stage of mockery, as you so subtly called it, Prince Harry, in fact, to use the capital nickname Stepan Trofimovich gave him then, which would have been perfectly correct if it were not that he is more like Hamlet, to my thinking at least.
Et vous avez raison,"
Stepan Trofimovich pronounced, impressively and with feeling. "Thank you, Stepan Trofimovich. I thank you particularly, too, for your unvarying faith in Nicholas, in the loftiness of his soul and of his destiny. That faith you have even strengthened in me when I was losing heart."
"Share, share."
Stepan Trofimovich was stepping forward when he checked himself, reflecting that it was dangerous to interrupt. "And if Nicholas had always had at his side," Varvara Petrovna almost shouted, "a gentle Horatio, great in his humility, another excellent expression of yours, Stepan Trofimovich, he might long ago have been saved from the sad and sudden demon of irony which has tormented him all his life." "The demon of irony" was a wonderful expression of yours again, Stepan Trofimovich. "But Nicholas has never had an Horatio or an Ophelia. He had no one but his mother. And what can a mother do alone and in such circumstances?" "Do you know, Pyotr Stepanovich, it's perfectly comprehensible to me now that a being like Nicholas could be found even in such filthy haunts as you have described. I can so clearly picture now that mockery of life, a wonderfully subtle expression of yours, that insatiable thirst of contrast, that gloomy background against which he stands out like a diamond, to use your comparison again, Pyotr Stepanovich. And then he meets there a creature ill-treated by everyone, crippled, half insane, and at the same time perhaps filled with noble feelings."
"Yes, perhaps."
"And after that, You don't understand that he's not laughing at her like everyone. Oh, you people! You can't understand his defending her from insult, treating her with respect, like a marquise. This Kirillov must have an exceptionally deep understanding of men, though he didn't understand Nicholas. It was just this contrast, if you like, that led to the trouble. If the unhappy creature had been in different surroundings, perhaps she would never have been brought to entertain such a frantic delusion. Only a woman can understand it, Pyotr Stepanovich. Only a woman. How sorry I am that you... Not that you're not a woman, but that you can't be one just for the moment so as to understand. You mean in the sense that the worse things are, the better it is? I understand, Varvara Petrovna. It's rather as it is in religion. The harder life is for a man, or the more crushed and poor the people are, the more obstinately they dream of compensation in heaven. And if 100,000 priests are at work at it too, inflaming their delusion and speculating on it, then... I understand you, Varvara Petrovna, I assure you. That's not quite it. But tell me, ought Nicholas to have laughed at her and have treated her as the other clerks in order to extinguish the delusion in this unhappy organism? Why Varvara Petrovna used the word organism, I couldn't understand. Can you really refuse to recognize the lofty compassion, the noble tremor of the whole organism with which Nicholas answered Kirillov? I do not laugh at her. A noble, sacred answer. Sublime, muttered Stepan Trofimovich. And observe, too, that he is by no means so rich as you suppose. The money is mine and not his, and he would take next to nothing from me then. I understand. I understand all that, Varvara Petrovna, said Pyotr Stepanovich, with a movement of some impatience. Oh, it's my character. I recognize myself in Nicholas. I recognize that youthfulness, that liability to violent, tempestuous impulses. And if we ever come to be friends, Pyotr Stepanovich, and for my part, I sincerely hope we may, especially as I am so deeply indebted to you, then perhaps you'll understand. Oh, I assure you, I hope for it too, Pyotr Stepanovich muttered jerkily. You'll understand, then, the impulse which leads one in the blindness of generous feeling to take up a man who is unworthy of one in every respect, a man who utterly fails to understand one, who is ready to torture one at every opportunity and in contradiction to everything, to exalt such a man into a sort of ideal, into a dream, to concentrate in him all one's hopes, to bow down before him, to love him all one's life, absolutely without knowing why, perhaps just because he was unworthy of it. Oh, how I've suffered all my life, Pyotr Stepanovich. Stepan Trofimovich, with a look of suffering on his face, began trying to catch my eye, but I turned away in time. And only lately, oh, how unjust I've been to Nicholas. You would not believe how they have been worrying me on all sides, all, enemies and rascals and friends, friends perhaps more than enemies. When the first contemptible anonymous letter was sent to me, Pyotr Stepanovich, you'll hardly believe it, but I had not the strength enough to treat all this wickedness with contempt. I shall never, never forgive myself for my weakness. I had heard something of anonymous letters here already, said Pyotr Stepanovich, growing suddenly more lively, and I'll find out the writers of them, you may be sure. But you can't imagine the intrigues that have been got up here. They have even been pestering our poor Praskovya Ivanovna, and what reason can they have for worrying her? I was quite unfair to you today, perhaps, my dear Praskovya Ivanovna, she added in a generous impulse of kindliness, though not without a certain triumphant irony. Don't say any more, my dear, the other lady muttered reluctantly. To my thinking, we'd better make an end of all this. Too much has been said. And again she looked timidly towards Lisa, but that the latter was looking at Pyotr Stepanovitch. "And I intend now to adopt this poor, unhappy creature, this insane woman who has lost everything and kept only her heart," Varvara Petrovna exclaimed suddenly. "It is a sacred duty I intend to carry out. I take her under my protection from this day." "And that will be a very good thing in one way," Pyotr Stepanovitch cried, growing quite eager again. "Excuse me, I did not finish just now. It's just the care of her I want to speak of. Would you believe it, that as soon as Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch had gone, I'm beginning from where I left off, Varvara Petrovna, this gentleman here, this Mr. Lebyadkin, instantly imagined he had the right to dispose of the whole pension that was provided for his sister, and he did dispose of it. I don't know exactly how it had been arranged by Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch at that time, but a year later, when he learned from abroad what had happened, he was obliged to make other arrangements. Again, I don't know the details, he'll tell you them himself. I only know that the interesting young person was placed somewhere in a remote nunnery, in very comfortable surroundings, but under friendly superintendence. You understand? But what do you think Mr. Lebyadkin made up his mind to do? He exerted himself to the utmost, to begin with, to find where his source of income, that is, his sister, was hidden. Only lately he attained his object, took her from the nunnery, asserting some claim to her, and brought her straight here. Here he doesn't feed her properly, beats her and bullies her. As soon as by some means he gets a considerable sum from Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, he does nothing but get drunk, and instead of gratitude, ends by impudently defying Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch, making senseless demands, threatening him with proceedings if the pension is not paid straight into his hands. So he takes what is a voluntary gift from Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch as a tax. Can you imagine it? Mr. Lebyadkin, is that all true that I have said just now? The captain, who had till that moment stood in silence, looking down, took two rapid steps forward and turned crimson.
"Pyotr Stepanovitch, you've treated me cruelly," he brought out abruptly.
"Why cruelly? How? But allow us to discuss the question of cruelty or gentleness later on. Now answer my first question. Is it true all that I have said or not? If you consider it's false, you are at liberty to give your own version at once."
"I... you know yourself, Pyotr Stepanovitch," the captain muttered.
But he could not go on, and relapsed into silence. It must be observed that Pyotr Stepanovitch was sitting in an easy chair, with one leg crossed over the other, while the captain stood before him in the most respectful attitude. Lebyadkin's hesitation seemed to annoy Pyotr Stepanovitch. A spasm of anger distorted his face. "Then you have a statement you want to make?" he said, looking subtly at the captain. "Kindly speak. We're waiting for you."
"You know yourself, Pyotr Stepanovitch, that I can't say anything."
"No, I don't know it. It's the first time I've heard it. Why can't you speak?" The captain was silent, with his eyes on the ground.
"Allow me to go, Pyotr Stepanovitch," he brought out resolutely.
"No, not till you answer my question. Is it all true that I've said?"
"It is true,"
Lebyadkin brought out in a hollow voice, looking at his tormentor. Drops of perspiration stood out on his forehead. "Is it all true?"
"It's all true."
"Have you nothing to add or to observe? If you think that we've been unjust, say so. Protest. State your grievance aloud."
"No, I think nothing."
"Did you threaten Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch lately?"
It was more drink than anything, Pyotr Stepanovitch."
He suddenly raised his head.
"If family honour and undeserved disgrace cry out among men, then is a man to blame?"
he roared suddenly, forgetting himself as before. "Are you sober now, Mr. Lebyadkin?" Pyotr Stepanovitch looked at him penetratingly.
"I am sober."
"What do you mean by family honour and undeserved disgrace?"
"I didn't mean anybody. Anybody at all. I meant myself," the captain said, collapsing again.
You seem to be very much offended by what I've said about you and your conduct. You are very irritable, Mr. Lebyadkin. But let me tell you, I've hardly begun yet what I've got to say about your conduct in its real sense. I'll begin to discuss your conduct in its real sense. I shall begin. That may very well happen. But so far I've not begun, in a real sense. Lebyadkin started and stared wildly at Pyotr Stepanovitch.
Pyotr Stepanovitch, I am just beginning to wake up.
And it's I who have waked you up?
Yes, it's you who have waked me, Pyotr Stepanovitch, and I've been asleep for the last 4 years with a storm cloud hanging over me. May I withdraw at last, Pyotr Stepanovitch?
Now you may, unless Varvara Petrovna thinks it's necessary. But the latter dismissed him with a wave of her hand. The captain bowed, took two more steps towards the door, stopped suddenly, laid his hand on his heart, tried to say something, did not say it, and was moving quickly away. But in the doorway he came face to face with Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch. The latter stood aside. The captain shrank into himself, as it were, before him, and stood as though frozen to the spot, his eyes fixed upon him like a rabbit before a boa constrictor. After a little pause, Nikolai Vsyevolodovitch waved him aside with a slight motion of his hand and walked into the drawing room.